Council's meeting on October 22nd. Would you please call the roll? And I think our other colleagues will be joining us.
Novick.
Here.
Fritz.
Here.
Fish. Saltzman. Hales.
Here. Let's take the first item, which is the land use appeal.
Item 1109, appeal of South Portland Neighborhood Association against the Design Commission's decision to approve with conditions the six-story mixed-use building with 270 residential units, 8,359 square feet of retail area, and 225 parking spaces at 3700 Southwest River Parkway.
Okay, and our city attorney will walk us through the procedural aspects of this, and then we'll get started.
I'm going to take a few minutes to describe the way the hearing will be conducted, including the kind of hearing, the order of testimony, and the scope of testimony. First, this is an evidentiary hearing. This means you may submit new evidence to the council in support of your arguments. As to the order of testimony, we'll begin with a staff report by Bureau of Development Services staff for approximately 10 minutes. Following the staff report, the council will hear from interested persons in the following order. The appellant will go first and will have 10 minutes to present its case. Following the appellant, persons who support the appeal will go next. Each person will have 3 minutes to speak to counsel. The principal opponent, in this case the applicant, will then have 15 minutes to address city council and rebut the appellant's presentation. If there is no principal opponent, counsel will move directly to testimony from persons who oppose the appeal after supporters of the appeal conclude their testimony. After the principal opponent, the council will hear from persons who oppose the appeal, that is, they support the application. Again, each person will have 3 minutes. Finally, the appellant will have 5 minutes to rebut the presentation of opponents of the appeal. Council may then close the hearing, deliberate, and take a vote on the appeal. If the vote is tentative, the council will set a future date for the adoption of findings and a final vote on the appeal. If council takes a final vote today, that will conclude the matter before council. I'd like to announce several guidelines for those who will be addressing City Council today. First, any letters or documents you wish to become part of the record should be given to the council clerk after you testify. Similarly, the original or a copy of any slides, photographs, drawings, maps, videos, or other items you show to council during your testimony, including PowerPoint presentations, should be given to the council clerk to make sure they become part of the record. Second, the testimony must be directed to the approval criteria. Any testimony, arguments, and evidence you present must be directed toward the applicable approval criteria for this land use review or other criteria in the city's comprehensive plan or zoning code you believe apply to the decision. BDS staff will identify the applicable approval criteria as part of their staff report. Third, issues must be raised with specificity. You have to raise an issue clearly enough to give the council and the other parties an opportunity to respond to the issue. If you don't, you will be precluded from appealing to the Land Use Board of Appeals based on that issue. And finally, the applicant must identify constitutional challenges to conditions of approval. If the applicant fails to raise constitutional or other issues relating to proposed conditions of approval with enough specificity to allow counsel to respond, the applicant will be precluded from bringing an action for damages in circuit court.
Okay, thank you very much. Do any of the council members have conflicts, potential conflicts of interest, or ex parte contacts to report? I don't either. Okay. We'll verify that with our colleagues if they are able to arrive in time for the hearing. So with that, let's have the staff report. Come on up, please.
Good afternoon, council members. My name is Stacey Monroe, and I'm with the Bureau of Development Services, Land Use Services Section. And I'm here today to present staff's presentation of the appeal for the Block 37 South Waterfront
Stacey, project. Stacey, your microphone doesn't seem to be on. Let's see if Sue is working on that. Hi, Dan. You don't have any conflicts of interest or contacts, right? Okay.
Is that better now?
Oh, yes. Better. Thank you.
Scoot a little closer. So the subject site of today's appeal is highlighted in red, the surrounding, known as Block 37 in South Waterfront. The surrounding area is developed mostly with towers and a few six-story buildings, as you will see in this aerial photograph. The towers to the north and west of the site are the Ardea and the Atwater, and further out is the Meriwether and the John Ross. The parcels immediately south and southwest of the site are undeveloped. At the bottom of the screen, you'll notice the Greenway Trail that is currently under construction. It occurs along the eastern edge of Block 37, and it extends further north along the river. This is an image of the South Waterfront Street Plan. The property is highlighted in yellow for reference. So within the street plan, it includes a total of 14 planned east-west connections that connect the interior of the district to the Greenway. The blue ones identified by these blue images are actual public dedicated streets, and they include, examples include Gaines, which occur at the north end of Block 37, and further north from Meade and Arthur. These green images here indicate the access ways. These are additional access ways that connect the district, the inner parts of the district, to the Greenway, for specifically for bikes and pedestrians. And these are designated on private property, and they occur mid-block on larger properties in intervals that mimic a more typical 200 by 200 block structure, typically found in Central City. So this is an image of the street plan kind of zoomed in the immediate area, and the property is highlighted there in red. The property is bounded by River Parkway to the west and Gaines to the north. Again, both of these are improved public streets. Southwest Lane borders the property on the south, and again, it is identified as a Greenway access connection on private property. The Greenway Trail, as I mentioned, is east of the site. In the surrounding area is the streetcar line that occurs on Moody and Bond. This image also shows the Greenway access connections in the vicinity, specifically to the north of the site, and they are Pennoyer and Curry. Both of these Greenway accessway connections have been improved with the abutting development, specifically the Merriweather. There is some precedent of projections into these accessways for the Merriweather Tower on the Pennoyer accessway, which I believe the applicant will explain a little bit more in detail in their presentation. So this is an image of the section of how the Greenway access connections are intended to be improved. The typical width of these accessways ranges from 50 to 60 feet, with equal halves of the overall width occurring on the abutting properties. Within the 50 to 60 foot right-of-way, there is a 12 to 25 foot wide pedestrian and bike path, with the remainder of the right-of-way being for stormwater and landscaping. In addition to these development standards, the zoning code has very specific standards for the accessways that occur east of River Parkway, which is applicable to the Block 37 site. And these specific standards are that buildings must be set back 30 feet from the accessway, and that there are specific landscape requirements to complement the Greenway species. So just a quick reference regarding zoning. The site is zoned.
Before you leave the right-of-way question, a point. Those are dedicated. You know, the typical approach in the South Waterfront is that those right-of-ways are dedicated, even though they're not fully improved as a street, right?
The streets are dedicated. The accessways, public easements, are required after they're improved.
Okay.
So they're dedicated for the purposes of maintaining public access, but they're not individual tracks, or they do not become part of the public right-of-way.
Right. Okay. So there's an easement on which
that extends the entire width of that accessway.
And the maintenance responsibility for the improvements in that easement lies with the property owners?
I believe so. Transportation is here, and they can probably answer that question.
Okay. Thank you.
Would you like them to come up now or at the end?
We'll get it later.
So, again, the property is zoned a central commercial with a design and Greenway overlays. It's in the South Waterfront Subdistrict of the Central City Plan District. There's an allowed FAR of 5-1. This is below that maximum of 3.78. And there's a 75-foot height limit within 125 feet of the top of bank. And this building is well below that at 72 for the overall building. So this is just an image looking at the site. As I mentioned, it is undeveloped. And this is an image looking northwest with the Atwater on the right and the Ardea to the left in the background. So a brief project summary. It's a six-story building, 270 residential units, a little over 8,000 square feet of retail. Parking is provided in the ground level, which is wrapped with retail and residential units, and then there is one below grade level of parking. Two loading spaces are provided within the building, and there's bike parking also provided throughout. So this is the site plan of the project. I've highlighted the building footprint with the red outline. And as you can see, the red line indicates the building footprint. It includes the projecting bays on the north, which project into Gaines Street. And it also includes the upper floors that project on the south facade, which is the subject of the appeal today. The black line indicates the property boundaries. And as you can see from that property boundary, it includes the property includes half of Southwest Lane that extends 30 feet onto the property, and that's where the modification is requested. It also includes landscaping in the greenway between the property and the edge of the future greenway trail that is indicated in the white paths on the right. So this image, the image on the bottom indicates is an enlarged section or enlarged image of the site plan. And the red line shows the 30-foot setback from the center line. What is proposed is for the building to be within 26 and a half feet from the center line of lane. And the image on the upper portion, the red boxes indicate the masses of the south facade that project that 3.5 feet. And this is just a section that shows the building projection and the ground level improvements on lane. As you can see, the ground level is out of the setback. It's 32 and a half feet, with the upper floors being 26 and a half feet. It should be noted, and it's evident in this image, that the pedestrian path, which is 20 feet wide total, but 10 feet on this property, is outside of the projecting facade. So it runs down the center of the right-of-way with the building facades. The upper building facades are projecting over individual residential stoops and an outdoor seating area for some retail. So the design review approval criteria that this project was subject to was the Central City Fundamental Design Guidelines, the South Waterfront District Design Guidelines, and the South Waterfront Greenway Design Guidelines. The modifications were subject to the approval criteria of Section 33.825.040 of the Zoning Code. The Land Use Review Appeal findings must find a nexus to relevant design guidelines or modification criteria. The appellant states that the modification approval criteria has not been met and has thus been approved in error. So the specific approval criteria that is being contested is the modification approval criteria, which states the project must, or the resulting development will better meet the design guidelines, and on balance, the proposal will be consistent with the purpose of the standard which is being modified. So I've highlighted on the screen the purpose of the accessway setback standards and the standards achieved to provide physical access and connections to the greenway. They are extensions of existing and planned east and west right-of-ways that may or may not provide vehicle access, and they contribute to stormwater management, and they provide a visual connection to the greenway area. So the project has gone through the design review process over the past year. It has had a design advice request a year ago and three formal design review hearings. During the process, the modification was specifically discussed, so much so that the Design Commission required revisions to improve the facade with the addition of recessed balconies. They added a condition of approval to improve the pedestrian realm within the accessway by adding benches and bike stalls and lights. And they stated additional reasons why they supported the projection at the final hearing when the project was approved. They specifically stated that the 60-foot width of the designated accessways was based on the potential for towers to be developed in the district. The width, 60 feet, which is comparable to a typical central city block structure, is sufficient for tall buildings in terms of the ratio of open space, natural light, and air to built space. Given the smaller scale of this building, 6 stories, the width of the accessway was determined to be more than adequate. So on September 2nd, the final findings went out, and it included 8 conditions of approval. They were to add some balconies on the west facade to match the lid cover for the underground vaults, to work on an alternative design solution for some bollards in the right-of-way, to use cedar for the balcony soffits, some material details regarding the stucco, material details regarding an accent metal panel, and lastly, in Southwest Lane, to delineate a furnishing zone at the north end that included more benches, bike stalls, and lights. And then the appeal was received from the public on September 15th. It should be noted that during the land use review process, the public and the neighborhood specifically was very involved in the hearings, and they submitted written testimony. Their participation has been very well organized and effective, and they contributed to some significant changes that are evident in the final design. Additional testimony has been received since yesterday, and staff has not yet had an opportunity to fully digest all of those, but we have noticed some familiar concerns that came up during the land use review process. However, they're not specifically relevant to the setback modification that's being appealed today. So the options before council today are to deny the appeal and uphold the Design Commission's decision to approve the project. Alternatively, they can uphold the appeal to deny the modification, which would overturn the Design Commission's approval. However, it should be noted that this second option would deny the project in its entirety because the design is contingent upon the modification. Lastly, the option is to grant the appeal and to deny the modification, but instruct the applicant to revise the design that doesn't necessitate the modification and return to council at a future date.
Could you describe the second option a little more? I don't understand the point there about how, you mean because the commission attached additional conditions?
The land use review that carried the project through was a design review.
Right.
The modification is an extra review kind of tacked on to that design review.
Mm-hmm.
So the design review approval approved the entire building, and the modification approved a portion of the building to project. But you can't deny the modification without denying the entire project because the project's contingent upon that design.
I see.
So they kind of go hand in hand.
Okay, I understand now. Thank you.
And that's the end.
All right, other questions for Stacy, for the staff? Thank you very much. I mean, we'll have more questions later.
Mayor, may I ask that in this yes. little break that we right. talk about ex parte and
right.
conflicts
so
on the record.
I just want to double check with two of our colleagues who arrive a little later whether you have any ex parte contacts to disclose or any potential conflicts of interest.
Neither.
No.
Okay, got that on the record. Thank you. Okay, then let's hear from the appellant, South Portland Neighborhood Association. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Welcome.
I guess I'll start by saying what's probably on the lips of every Portland today, and that's, is it wet enough for you?
Yes.
My name is Jim Gardner, 2930 Southwest 2nd Avenue, 97201. I'm the land use chairman for the South Portland Neighborhood Association, and I filed this appeal. If you've read the case file, and I assume you have, you know that this appeal is about a single issue, whether the Block 37 project is allowed an exception to the setback required by the zoning code along Lane Street. This is a pretty straightforward, simple matter. So rather than bore you for 10 minutes citing chapter and verse from the zoning code, I thought I'd first fill in some of the backstory, provide a little context for why this appeal is here. I'll get to the details of the code and why we feel an exception is not warranted here, but first there's some things that you won't learn from the case file. For example, you wouldn't know that for the first couple of Design Commission hearings, this project asked to be allowed to intrude 20 feet into a designated view corridor along Gaines Street on the north side of the lot. In fact, the early staff memos actually said that this modification was, quote, supportable. But only because of clear and factual objections from the neighbors was the staff and the Design Commission convinced to reject that request. Another thing you don't know, if you look clearly at the renderings, you can see that the building now has bay windows and balconies on all the sides except the side facing the river. I call them bay windows. Architects call them oriole windows for some reason, but they were originally not in the original proposal at all. It had none of these elements. It proposed six stories of a slab-sided flat plane of panels of metal, stucco, and glass. Again, in several steps, these elements were added at the insistence of the neighbors and the design commission. You also wouldn't learn from the case file that this building was initially even closer to the eastern edge of its lot and even further crowded the Willamette Greenway. Again, very grudgingly, the architects and the developer moved the building back a little from the Greenway. Not nearly enough in the view of people who really care about the Greenway experience, but that's not the issue today, so I won't even get into that. But. And finally, if you dig in and really read the Design Commission transcripts, which I would assume you probably didn't have time to do, you wouldn't know from the case file, though, that at the final hearing, the regular members of your Design Commission were evenly split on whether to grant this exception. There was a long discussion and debate among the members, and at the end, the vote on the motion to approve it was a tie, 2-2 tie. Only when the chair voted in a fairly unusual situation, only the chair's vote had to happen to break that tie. My point being that this was not, for your design commission, a slam-dunk, clear-cut decision. And one last thing before I get into the zoning code. This is not about NIMBY. At no time from beginning to end did the neighbors want to stop or block this project. In fact, this particular design is very favorable for most of the neighbors. They all live in high-rise towers. They've got great views to the east and to the south. There was always the potential that their views would be blocked by another tower on this site. So for most of those neighbors, a six-story building is a godsend because it gives them permanent protection for their views. But they also feel that this is their neighborhood, and they want it to be as good as possible. And they also want new buildings in the neighborhood to follow the rules. And the rules are the zoning code. Section 33510.252, which I think you may have a copy of because I passed out copies. It contains development standards, not just subjective guidelines, but objective standards that sites in South Waterfront must meet. Subsection B deals with what are called accessways, and Lane Street is one of those. That says the buildings east of River Parkway must be set back at least 30 feet from the center line of the public accessway. In this project, floors 2-6 do not meet that requirement. They intrude into that 30-foot setback by 3.5 feet. So this building needs an exception or a modification to that requirement. Now, there's a different section of the zoning code that spells out what are the criteria for granting modifications. That's on the back side of my sheet, and it's section 33.825.040. And those criteria are pretty clear. The exception can be granted if the resulting development better meets the applicable design guidelines and the proposal is consistent with the purpose of the standard. Now, you've all seen times when determining the exact purpose of a regulation can be basically a guessing game. But in this case, the code section about the accessways clearly states the purposes for requiring a 30-foot setback. It names four very specific purposes: to provide a safe and convenient bike and pedestrian access to the Greenway, to contribute to stormwater management, to provide a visual connection to the Greenway, and to provide a transition from the natural character of the Greenway and the urban character of the district. I really found it interesting and a little bit disturbing that the written staff report that justified the Design Commission decision only mentioned the first two of those four criteria, the bike ped connection and stormwater management. This was disturbing in a way because it's the other two criteria that this project does not meet. And that, in a nutshell, explains this appeal. Remember, the code requires that a project has to better meet the purposes of the standard in order to be given a modification. Not approximately meet, not equally meet, but better meet those purposes. So if the purpose of a 30-foot setback, is to provide a visual connection to the greenway, how is that purpose better met by providing a 26.5-foot setback? Clearly, it's not. If the purpose of a 30-foot setback is to provide a graceful transition between the greenway and the urban character of the district, how is that purpose better met by providing 26.5-foot setback? Again, clearly it's not. Now, one could argue that a 26.5-foot setback is almost as good as 30 feet. It's only about 12% less, so maybe that's not very significant. But to assert that 26.5 feet does a better job of meeting those purposes than 30 feet is just seems implausible on its surface. The developer has said that they want those floors 2 through 6 to extend that 3.5 feet into the setback in order to shelter some of those entrances and in order to give some variety to that side of the building. But they could just as easily design small roofs or canopies over those entrances without needing an exception, without needing a modification to the zoning code. It provides just as much shelter, just as much variety. So finally, what will happen if you uphold this appeal and deny the exception? Frankly, not very much. The developer has said that they'll simply move floors 2 through 6 back 3.5 feet. The project will not be delayed. They've assured me verbally and they've assured BDS staff in writing that regardless of how this appeal goes, that building footprint will not change. All the good design aspects of this building, the balconies, the stormwater swales, the street furniture, they'll all still be there. The development community, you know, often says that they can follow any code requirements as long as they are clear and objective and applied consistently. In other words, what's most important is certainty. South Portland Neighborhood Association and the neighbors of this project are just asking for the same thing, certainty. Please just make this project follow the rules, grant this appeal, and deny that exception. Thank you very much for your attention, your consideration. I'd be happy to respond to any questions you might have.
So, Jim, the staff described and you made reference to the rest of the design review process that took place for this proposed project.
Right.
And I just want to make sure I understand you there on that point. And that is, would you say that with the exception of this issue, with the exception of this question of the 3.5-foot setback difference, that the design review process, both the staff's interaction with the neighborhood, the staff's interaction with the commission and the commission's deliberations was a success, that we got to a better designed project that responded to legitimate concerns and maybe does a better job of reaching some of the other goals than it did in the first iteration? In other words, would you rate the rest of the design review discussion that's taken place here in the evolution of this project as a success?
I would say it's an unqualified success. The building is much better now than when it was first, the design was first submitted.
Mm-hmm.
And both the neighbors and their very persuasive and very rational arguments, and also the design commission staff and their observations all led to changes. As Stacey mentioned, there have been many changes, and all of them from the neighborhood's point of view were in the right direction.
Good, thank you. Any questions?
Thank you for your testimony. Very well laid out, as always. I'm having some difficulty with the with it having to be as good or better, because the setback, it says the buildings must be set back at least 30 feet.
Right.
Under the logic that you just laid out, it should say adjustments are prohibited because you could never get less than 30 feet.
Well, again, there's another section of the code that says why and when you can grant exceptions. And that's where the language about the project better meets the guidelines with the exception than it would without it. And that's essentially what I'm saying. Equally meet it, it doesn't cut it, really. The language of the code says better meet. Do a better job of meeting.
So then it
And it goes on, of course, to have a second criteria, and that is that it's consistent with the purpose of the requirement. And that's, I guess, one of our major arguments with this is that purpose in the code is very clearly identified. Many times it's not. You have to kind of guess. But this lays out four reasons, and visual connection to the greenway is clearly one of those, and that transition between the greenway and the urban district is another one. And I guess the bottom line, if 30 feet's required to give you a good visual connection, then how can 26 and a half feet do a better job of giving you a visual connection?
But the 30 feet is adjustable. It can be modified. It doesn't say...
It can be modified if it meets those criteria in that other code section.
But under your logic, it never would meet that criteria.
Often with something that's that specific, you're right. I mean, with guidelines, and you and I and many other people have struggled over the years, they're always subjective, and you can always have reasonable people can disagree about guidelines. An objective standard that says your building cannot be any taller than 45 feet, you're right. A 50-foot building could never better meet that 45-foot height limit.
So you're saying that the projection doesn't provide the visual connection?
It doesn't provide a better visual connection than a 30-foot setback would.
But, yeah, I want to follow up on that if I can. The phrase that you're quoting here is that the resulting development will better meet the applicable design guidelines,
right.
Not just that the modification itself will better meet the guidelines. So I assume that what we as the council should do in evaluating these cases, or that the design commission should do, is look at the development as a whole. Uh-huh. Is the development as a whole better with the modification than without it? And I guess the question in this case is, and your point about the project likely to be, that it's likely to still happen without it, raises the question of how severable is this modification from all the other modifications that got made in order to improve the design of the building?
Well, there were no other code modifications.
No other code modifications.
There were guidelines
right. That
were interpreted to conclude that the building met those guidelines.
Mm-hmm.
But an actual the Design Commission usually doesn't struggle with code standards. They're usually dealing with guidelines.
Yeah.
You know, can I piggyback off this? This is an excellent discussion. So you're representing the Neighborhood Association. You're not here as the lawyer. Who's the lawyer? Who's your lawyer in this case?
We have no lawyer.
That's the Neighborhood Association.
I'm just representing the Neighborhood Association.
And
I'm not a lawyer. No.
So one of the questions, another way of asking the excellent question that has been posed is, what do you know whether there have been any, are there any examples that you're aware of where this language has been applied successfully to modify
A code requirement.
Requirement. You probably don't have them all at your fingertips, but can you think of an example where it's been interpreted in the way that you are asking us to apply it? Doesn't have to be with a greenway, but just conceptually where someone has said doesn't better meet, so we have a sense of how it's been applied.
Well, I can hypothetically think of examples where a building, if it were not granted an exception of this type, had to be dramatically redesigned, had to be changed in significant ways because of not getting the exception. And that new design may in many ways not be as good as the original. And that's where I think the idea of looking at the development as a whole certainly has to come into play. And there would be lots of situations where a building relied on getting an exception to the code for some very significant design reason. In this case, that's not true. All of the design of this building will look virtually exactly the same if those two facades just move back 3.5 feet.
Okay, other questions?
Well, there's an issue here we're going to have to talk to staff about later, but I want to join Commissioner Fritz in just saying that was exceptionally clear testimony on complicated issues, so thank you.
Thank you. Well, actually, when I started, as I said, I don't think it's a complicated issue. It's a fairly straightforward one compared to what the design commission usually has to struggle with on guidelines.
Just say this: sometimes in these hearings, by the time the opening statements, we're hopelessly confused about the issue on this side. So the fact that you have framed your issue clearly is a service to our deliberations.
Well, thank you.
I just have a follow-up question: is there another development that's already been done that has a similar projection?
Excuse me?
My understanding is there's a building that's already been built in South Waterfront that has a projection into the right-of-way.
Late in the process, the Design Commission staff and I think the applicants pointed out that I believe the Merriweather has some elements that it's also on an access way, mm-hmm. and it has some elements that projected in there. I don't know for sure what those elements are, but I guess bottom line, if that was not caught and overlooked the first time around, it certainly shouldn't be a precedent for doing it again.
Well, I was hoping to be able to go down and look at that building. I unfortunately have not been able to do that. So that's something that I'd be interested in hearing testimony on from folks. Do you think that, you know, we have a project that's been built. Right. Does it significantly impact the visual connection?
Yeah, and while I don't believe that should be considered a precedent to allow this intrusion into the setback, I want to maybe let you know that on the other side of the Delane Street, there's a vacant lot, as you saw, which will certainly have a new development built on it. And I guess what we're also concerned is granting this intrusion into that setback will then be cited as a precedent for maybe that one wants to go in 3.5 feet as well, or maybe more.
I just have one more question, which is whose visual field is being obstructed? Who will not have as good a view?
The general public. Anybody on the street, anybody further west looking toward the Greenway. Because, again, the code says you should have a 60-foot wide altogether access way on both sides of the center line. And by 12%, most of this building mass will stick into that. So everybody's visual field. Not residents in the condos nearby so much, because they're not looking down the street. But it's essentially down that Lane Street is where the view would be. Admittedly, not blocked, not greatly diminished, but some.
But at street level, it's 60 feet.
So or more.
Well, as you go further west, though, you're rising. You're not looking right at street level anymore, and particularly up on McAdam Avenue looking toward the river as you're driving by, you'll look down that street and this building will stick in.
And what's the view? Is it just the view of the river?
Mm-hmm. It's meant to be, in terms of what the code lays out as the purpose, a visual connection to the Greenway, and I guess by implication the river just beyond it, yeah.
Yeah, if you're walking down the pedestrian walkway, which is sort of in the middle of the 60 feet, I mean, you'll still be able to see the Greenway looking straight ahead of you, obviously.
Yeah. If you're in that block, if you're 2 or 3 blocks further west, you'll see something sticking into that 30-foot setback to some extent. 12%, it's not a great amount.
Okay. Well, that's helpful. Thank you. Other questions for Jim? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Now we want to call for anyone who signed up as an individual supporter of the appeal, the Neighborhood Association appeal.
We have 11 people signed up. Will Melanie Diamond, Robert Nunn, Phil Juklin come up, please? They'll be followed by Jim Luke, Neil Kramer, and Leland Stapleton.
Come on up. Good afternoon. Welcome.
Hello.
Go ahead and you can be first.
Oh, boy. Okay. Well, thank you for your time. This is a first for me. I'm going to skip all the definitions.
Can you give us your name for the record?
Oh, I'm sorry. Sure.
3 minutes.
It's Melanie Diamond, and I live in the South Waterfront area. I'm not going to go into the details and the definition of the code. I think that was articulately explained by James. The Block 37 building is set back currently in the design that is proposed 26 feet and 6 inches. It's not the required 30 feet from the center line of the accessway. Block 37 projects 3 feet 6 inches into the required southwest lane accessway on floors 2 through 6. Here are the reasons for the violation. The encroachment is used for additional rental space on 5 floors. The developer is able to build approximately 2,800 square feet of additional space. More rentable space translates into an additional gross annual income of about $70,000 to $85,000 a year. More space translates into an increased projected value of approximately $500,000 to $700,000. The developer did not propose tangible benefits to offset the code violation. The Design Commission suggested 4 benches and 4 stalls. So here are the consequences of the violation. And there are 3. Number 1, special access ways are compromised. Access ways east of River Parkway were singled out in the building code with specific setback requirements. These blocks are special because A, the city wanted to provide a transition between the urban character to the west of River Parkway and the Willamette Greenway and the river. Blocks east of River Parkway are 1.5 to 2 times the length of standard city blocks, 320 feet versus 200 feet, and a constricted width would degrade the visual and physical connection to the river. The southwest lane accessway width may be reduced further. That's the second violation. The Design Commission commented that the development on the south side of Lane Street would be looking for approval of a similar encroachment setback. If that happens, the Lane Street accessway will be reduced from 60 feet to 53 feet. That's more than a 10% reduction of a space already overcrowded with bioswales, private patios, street furniture, zone bollards, and other walkway amenities. So the biggest issue is a dangerous Portland precedent will be established. Trading already limited open space that is meant to be an amenity for the general public for the benefit of a private developer establishes a precedent that is not consistent with Portland's values. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Yes, welcome. Can I go next?
Okay. Councilors, my name is Robert Nunn. I live across the street at the Atwater Place condominiums, and Commissioner Fish, I'm not here as a lawyer, I'm here as a neighbor and as a citizen. I intended to lecture you on what Mr. Gardner referred to as the tedious details of the code. I instead am giving you a tedious letter, and we'll talk about some of the other things instead. I wanted to emphasize this is a 3-2 vote. That comes out of your commission. This was not an easy decision for them, and it was not an uncontroversial decision for them. I would ask you to consider again the purposes stated for this accessway. But more than anything, I would like to talk to you about the investment that this council has made in the South Waterfront area. The city of Portland has put millions upon millions of dollars into this neighborhood, and we appreciate it. We love that neighborhood. But those investments were made based on a code which was intended to create a unique neighborhood in the city of Portland, a neighborhood that had an extraordinary sense of quality. And to nibble away at that vision and to jeopardize the investments you've already made is not something that this council should do. Commissioner Fritz asked a very good question about, well, can you ever have a modification that would work for a visual corridor? And I think maybe the answer is no. But those modification requirements apply not merely to visual corridors, to many other aspects of the code as well. For example, in this land use matter, there's a modification dealing with the parking, the tandem parking, We have not appealed that. We have not argued about it. We haven't even talked with the developer about it. But that's one of the areas where those modification guidelines work perfectly fine. But when it comes to something like a visual corridor, there probably really can't be an improvement to a 60-foot setback, to a 60-foot view corridor. I can't imagine how it would work, but those modification principles work quite well elsewhere. My request for you today is to consider the vision for this neighborhood and don't allow it to be eroded by small decisions with a little exception here and a little exception there. And soon, this neighborhood will not be as exceptional as we all hope it will be. Thank you.
Welcome. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Phil Juckland. I'm a resident of South Waterfront neighborhood, having moved there in 2008. My wife and I decided to move there largely because of the vision of the neighborhood, which included high-rise residential buildings with restaurants and local businesses on the first floor, with lots of green space and easy access to the Willamette River, as well as being close to medical care. We were told this vision would continue into the future because of the city building codes and guidelines established by various neighborhood and city organizations. The developers at the time had models of the neighborhood demonstrating how the neighborhood would look as it grows. The models had about 12 high-rise buildings on it with at least a dozen low-rise or medium-rise buildings in it. One of the high-rise buildings was supposed to be on this 37, lot 37. This is a showcase neighborhood for Portland. People come from around the world to look at it. Now we have before us this project which wants to violate the codes and guidelines as well as the original vision for this neighborhood. Basically, this project wants to cram more units onto a parcel than it can be supported. Those before me have identified the specifics of the violations. The code violations do not benefit the neighborhood, but detract. Most of the buildings built down there add to the neighborhood. So now we're looking at one that wants to detract from the neighborhood. There are many aspects of this project not part of this hearing that will significantly impair the livability in the neighborhood. It will impinge on the greenway, as people have noted, which is for all Portlanders and which you have spent millions of dollars developing. It will increase the stress on the local parking, which is so desperately needed by local businesses. Businesses are not able to operate down there or go out of business because people can't get down there. There's no place for them to park. And this project makes it worse. My request is to ask you to uphold the original vision for South Waterfront. You are making a decision that will impact the neighborhood for 40 years or more. You are setting a precedent that will govern future development. This is clear. It is clear that this is a bad project for the neighborhood and for the city. We can and should do much better. We only get one chance. Remember, you represent the citizens of Portland, not out-of-state developers. Thank you for your listening to my testimony, and thank you for your service to the city.
Sir, can I just ask you one question? You said at the end that this project is a bad project for the city. Is that because of the 3'6" encroachment, or do you have other concerns about the project?
No, others. Many others.
You have others. Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you all. Thank you very much. Okay, let's take the next three.
Next three, please come up. Jim Luke, Neil Kramer, Leland Stapleton. They will be followed by Lloyd Kendrick, Michelle Munt, and Mary Ng.
Good afternoon. Welcome.
Good afternoon. My name is Jim Luke. I live at 0841 Southwest Gaines Street, number 431. That's in Portland, 97239. I appreciate you having us here today. When people talk to me about South Waterfront, they are excited at what a great place it has turned out to be. I've always been proud of the City of Portland for the planning and the investment that was necessary for it to become this great place to live in and to visit. Over the years that we have lived in South Waterfront, I have met many people from all around the world who enjoyed the environment that it has created here on the west bank of the Willamette. So thank you for that. Here we are as the construction is being completed for the central portion of the Greenway. And again, we are excited that another part of the great planning and investment is becoming a reality. But now I realize that the planning and the design guidelines that have been enacted to protect that planning are being sidestepped to allow the developer of Block 37 to have a larger building, which translates into more profit for him. Now, I don't know where you come from, but where I come from in South Waterfront, to me, that stinks. The idea that this developer was able to get approval for encroaching 3.5 feet into Lane Street on 5 floors of his building is way beyond anything I could envision here in South Waterfront. So how did this happen? Well, of course we had to appeal this. I know that you have the power to overturn this approval, and I actually feel that you will overturn this approval. Thank you for that. Some of the guidelines which were sidestepped in the project were the stepping back or the erosion of the building at the Greenway and the lack of a riverwalk where the public can leisurely enjoy the river and the Greenway. The Greenway is going around the bioswale at Block 37, which makes these guidelines more important because the building crowds the Greenway so much. Try as we might, we were not able to get the Design Review Commission to understand the importance of the Greenway and the Greenway to the public. They were only focused on the building and what it could be to the residents of the building. It seemed to us that the Greenway and the Riverwalk were not items that needed attention from them. All this planning and all this investment, and it could have been so much better at Block 37 and the Greenway. Sorry.
Thank you.
You have more time if you want.
Yeah, you're okay. That was just the 30-second warning, so you're fine. Thank you. Thank you. Welcome.
Hi, I'm Neil Creamer. I live in the Atwater Place. Rather than repeat what others have said, there are two things that have come up just now that concern me. One is that it seems that if one entity has violated this access way by encroaching, that it justifies another one to do the same thing, which, of course, then would justify the next one and the next one and the next one. It sounds to me like the 60-foot right-of-way that's built into the axeway is being amended, the code itself being amended by what's going on here today. And that's a troublesome concept to me because it doesn't fit what I think the appeal is about. The other part that's come up is that we're looking at that potentially the concept that a modification needs to better satisfy the goal has to be looked at as a whole. That says, well, maybe we have to look at how it fronts on the Greenway and the modifications to the and the impact of the guidelines there. You're bringing in all these other issues that, as Commissioner Fish asked, you know, that there are other problems that we have that aren't really part of directly this appeal. But maybe if you're looking at the impact of this 3.5 feet as part of the whole impact of the building, we have to get into these other issues. I don't think that's your intent. And that's why I think you just have to focus on the accessway being amended in the code by this process. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
My name is Leland Stapleton, 3550 Southwest Bond Avenue. I'm not going to repeat some of my comments because they were repetitious of prior comments. So I'm just going to say this building with no view of the water or greenway to many of the prospective residents is bursting at the edges. Leads one to conclude it doesn't fit, don't permit.
Thank you. Thanks very much. You don't often get poetry in land use cases. So.
Mayor, just by way of clarification, people who testify before us in these proceedings do not have to give us their address, correct?
That's right.
They can come from any part of the city and live anywhere they want.
That's true.
They are not required to give us their address.
No, somebody did, but you're free to do that, but you're not required. Come on up. Have you called the next three?
All right, the next three, Lloyd Kendrick, Michelle Munt, and Mary Ng.
Come on up.
Begin?
Oh. Yes, go ahead.
My name is, hello, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Michelle Munt, and I want you to follow your own code, and I agree with people who say, well, if you break it for somebody, it will break it for the next developer. We'll get a little bit more feet. And in my way of saying it, you're making a mockery of your own code, I'm sorry to say. And what they mean by a visual to the greenway, it would actually help your shops, which they may be floundering because they're not really based on a business license. It's not based on a business plan of making profit. You guys don't base on doing business anyway. I don't really see you making business in Portland. But what I was going to say about that is living downtown every day, what it means is the visual, if you can see that it's a river and it's kind of cool, you would go down there and buy something and go to the restaurant. So if you do cut it off a million times, it's a personal experience. Actually, it's this way. I'm looking down the river and I see, oh, there's the fountain. Oh, I could go down there. So that's why you need every last inch, because sometimes you can only see a little triangle of green as the waterfront from up on 4th or 5th and 6th. Mm-hmm. So you need every inch to protect your businesses if you really want your businesses to make money down there. Yeah, I'm very, do not respect the way you're handling things because you don't follow your own code.
Thank you.
Hi, Council. It's great to see all of you. How are you today?
All right, just put your name in the record, Mary.
My name is Mary Yang. I just wanted to say thank you to the South Portland Neighborhood Association for their vibrant participation, and I wanted to laud them. I don't have much to say. I just wanted to thank the South Portland Neighborhood Association for their participation and their lively debate and their passion and their neighborhood involvement. I think they serve as a model for citizen participation in the local sphere. And then I wanted to bring something anecdotally about an artist called Hundert Wasser, like 100 waters. And he took that name because he was a pioneer of green design in Germany, but he did a lot about beauty in architecture and beauty in landscaping. And one of his standby maxims was that oppressive architecture will oppress the human spirit for lifetimes and generations. And so maybe we should really listen to these engaged citizens and value their testimony because this has such a lasting impact for the future of Portland in a very beautiful neighborhood. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Okay, next.
Okay, and we did have Lloyd Kendrick, if he's here, if he wanted to speak. And Ben Pickering is our last person who signed up.
Come on up if you still want to testify. Okay, thank you. Go ahead.
My testimony is just repeating.
Just give us your name, though, sir. Give us your name for the record.
My testimony is repeating all of the factors that have gone into this.
Okay.
Portland had a vision in 2003. And that vision is for the future of Portland. The building is asking for changes. I don't think that we need changes at that part of Oregon.
Thank you. Mr. Kendrick, right? Thank you. Lloyd Kendrick, did I get that right?
Thank you
very much. Appreciate it. Thank you for your testimony.
Okay.
So is that all that are signed up in support of the appeal? Anyone else? Okay, so let's hear the applicant's presentation now, please. Using PowerPoint there.
You should have handouts.
Here we go.